Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Jason Mitchell back on the show. We're going to be talking spring walleye fishing. Specifically, we kind of narrowed down a presentation, and we've talked about it on past episodes and past years, but jerkbaits. You know, the shallow spring walleyes and, you know, just the utility of a search bait like casting jerkbaits or trolling. I mean, we kind of mention, you know, the flexibility, the versatility of it, but, you know, search baits. And, you know, I think about on a year like this, especially in the Dakotas, you know, where we can fish walleyes year round. But even in a lot of places, I mean, this conversation is going to be very relevant at some point in the spring for anybody across the Midwest. But, you know, Jason being from Devil's Lake, you know, casting jerkbaits in the spring is super common. I mean, it's an absolute tool, very effective, proven tool. And that's what we talk about. You know, Jason kind of just shares his experience into some of his opinions. And we've had these conversations before. It's a very popular one, shallow jerk baits. But I really enjoy it. You know, I think that, you know, just the selection of lures and just how fun it is to catch a fish casting, you know, a hard bait any time of year. It's just so much fun to talk about these things. But yeah, there's so many lures to choose from. They all have, you know, different functions, different abilities, different, you know, different scenarios where they really excel. And so Jason just breaks down some of the real common, you know, situations where jerkbaits really pay off for him. And that's what's fun about this particular interview. And yeah, just a fun way to catch a fish. I can't wait to get out there and put this stuff into action. So anyways, yeah, we've got Jason Mitchell here. We're talking jerkbaits and we're going to jump right into this. We get right into the information in this particular interview. And I will say this, for whatever reason, the first like 15, 20 seconds of audio in this particular interview didn't record. So we jump right in after I had asked Jason to just get right into the jerkbait, spring jerkbait conversation. And you know, we miss about 10 seconds. So not very much, but we miss about 10 seconds of his audio just establishing that, you know, casting jerkbaits is a great search bait for him. So we get right into it. That's the first question, first answer, and we get pretty much all of it. But I just wanted to throw that out there that we missed about 20 seconds of audio where I had just asked him to introduce the topic of casting jerkbaits, and it's a search bait for him. So we'll get right into it here. Jerkbaits, Jason Mitchell, let's do it. This episode is brought to you by Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. This podcast is brought to you by Northland Fishing Tackle. Northland is a brand you can trust. Since the beginning, they've been creating innovative lure designs made of high-quality components. Most importantly, when you buy fishing tackle that says Northland on the package, you can rest assured it is designed for one thing and one thing only, and that is catching fish. To check out more of what they got, head to their website, northlandtackle.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. This episode of the JMO Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast.
I feel like sometimes jerkbaits can, you know, they cover a higher part of the water column than, say, a jig and a minnow or even a jig and a plastic. And, you know, like say if the boat's in say 7 feet for argument's sake, and you're casting up into 3 feet of water and you're bringing that lure back, you know, that bait might be working say 2 to maybe 2.5 feet down. And there's times early in the year where those fish up in shallow water aren't glued to the bottom, you know, especially, you know, there's a couple of different things. Like if you have a little bit of wind, for example, a little bit of chop on the water, if you have some sunshine beating down where that water's starting to warm up, and the very top part of that water column has got the heat. Sometimes those fish will position up high enough in it. And in those types of situations, I find that a jerkbait, you know, can be better than anything. You know, whenever those fish are running a little high up off the bottom, like say in 5 feet of water, they're halfway down in the water column. Or, you know, if you have a, you know, just say a flat or a nondescript shoreline where there's no inside cups, there's no fingers or rock spines or anything coming out that could maybe concentrate fish. You know, there's certain shorelines that are just hard to use a slip bobber on because they're gradual and they're flat, but the fish can be anywhere on those flats and they're moving around on them. And I find that, you know, moving around and covering a little bit of water with a jerk bait can be really, really deadly.
Yeah. One thing, you know, I think this was actually an old conversation between us about a different presentation, but it was sort of like, you know, casting versus trolling. I mean, some of these baits can be casted or trolled at different times of year, different applications, whatever. You're talking about casting a jerk bait, it's essentially a crank bait, whatever. But you made a point to me that was kind of impactful, and I've tied it into my fishing strategy, especially in the spring, you know, like the scenario you just described, where kind of like a, you know, a nondescript shoreline, it holds fish, but they're probably moving around. There's nothing concentrating them or just holding them in one place. And so, you know, why wouldn't you just, you know, maybe troll it, or, you know, maybe long line it, or maybe throw some planer boards, get them up into shallow water. But you kind of taught me something long ago. I want you to kind of describe it, some of your experience with it, where casting allows you to cover 2 foot of water all the way back to the boat that's 7 foot of water, and just covering, because the fish aren't always going to be in one depth. I want you to kind of lean into that a little bit and describe that, because you've really taught me a lot just kind of describing that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways to look at it. Obviously, you could troll, right, especially with multiple lines where, you know, maybe you have a planer board up in 3 feet of water, and you've got lures behind the boat. The inside rod might be in 5 feet, and the outside rod might be in 7 feet. I mean, you can definitely troll and cover water. But one of the things that I find is that there's so many situations where there's debris, you know, there's, you know, stuff coming up off the bottom that can follow your hooks up. And that stuff only works if you can run those lures clean and free. And what I find with casting is, you know, at the end of every cast, if that lure isn't running right, or if it's fouled up, or got anything hanging on the hooks, you can clean it off immediately and then make another cast. Whereas, you know, if you're trolling a planer board up in that 3 feet of water, that'll work if you can keep it clean. But every time you make bottom contact, every time there's a little bit of an in or an out where that contour changes and you pound bottom hard and you've got a bunch of, you know, something hanging on those hooks, you know what? You might get lucky to be able to see the lure behind the board if it's really fouled up. But, you know, every second that you're pulling that lure where it's not working right, you're wasting your time. And the other thing to remember, too, is that when you are casting, you can work a lot of, it's easier to work stops and stalls and twitches and pauses into the bait itself. And early in the year, that's a really powerful trigger, where there's times, especially with jerk baits, where every fish is going to come on the stop. And sometimes you almost have to stop for 1/1000, 2/1000, 3/1000, and then give it another pop. You know, and so that hang time you get when you're casting, you know, those pauses are really powerful and really necessary a lot of times when you're, you know, fishing in the spring, cold water temps.
I want to get going, you know, early in this conversation with lure selection as well, because there's so many variations of the type of baits that you can cast in shallow water in the spring. There's so many different designs, makes, models. You've been in the industry a long time. You've seen, understood, you've been involved in lure design for specific scenarios, all this. Where does that conversation go? What are some fun stories or advice or just learning experiences or just some of those recommendations as it pertains to when you're looking in your tackle box or you're going to the retail store to buy some baits that you want to cast in the springtime?
Well, there's many baits that'll work. And probably the biggest thing is you have to determine where the fish are in the water column. You know, there's some baits that might only go down a foot and a half, and they work phenomenal. a couple different situations. Maybe you've got some weeds coming up, which isn't so much in the springtime, but you'll see that later on in the summer where the weeds start to grow up, and then you have to get over the top of the weeds, and the fish will come up out of the weeds and hit it, you know, a foot, 2 feet below the surface. And then there's other situations where you have, it seems like sunshine can really pull those fish up high, you know, which you think, oh, the sun's out bright, you know, you think that the fish should be glued to the bottom. What I find is early in the year, you know, before that water temperature is 55 degrees, if it's bright, hot, sunny, flat, sometimes those fish should be riding pretty high, you know, and you really have to cast to them or run a planer board to them because they do push off of the boat when they're that high in the water column. But, you know, there's some baits, for example, that have a slow sink. There's some baits that float that can be really deadly. There's some baits that that just suspend that have a hang. There's some baits that kind of suspend nose down and tail up. That can be a powerful trigger at times. You know, and so it's a little bit of experimentation, you know, and obviously you have confidence. You get confidence with certain baits that produced in the past, but there's a lot of good baits, and there's a lot of different types of baits, you know, that have a lot of different actions. There's some baits that have a really aggressive slashing side-to-side action when you snap it forward, and there's other baits that you just kind of do a slow reel and give it a few twitches once in a while, you know, and so there's really a wide range of baits. I mean, you look at, well, like all the fish we've caught in the last couple of years on that Rumble Shiner, you know, which is more of a floating minnow bait, but phenomenal spring bait, you know, when those fish are going on balsa. And then you've got, you know, some classics like Countdowns. That's a sinking bait, which you can almost work it like a twitch bait or a jerk bait. And then you've got your X-Wraps, you've got your Salmel Stings, you've got some Mega Bass stuff that can be pretty good for walleyes, even a pointer minnow from Lucky Craft. Oh, goodness. I mean, there's all kinds of Rapala baits that are, you know, considered jerk baits. And I guess, you know, a true jerk bait, for the most part, is a bait that you can pop forward, stop, and it suspends. You know, where it's you're jerking the rod tip or snapping the rod tip. And but there's a lot of variation of that. I mean, any shallow running bait, you can work that same way. And sometimes you don't necessarily need that suspending action. You know, you look at a shallow running shadow wrap could be a really deadly lure in the springtime. That Rumble Shiner's got a shallow bill where it only goes down maybe, oh, I don't know, 2.5-3 feet on a cast, but that's a deadly spring bait. And so I think the biggest thing is you want to find where the fish are in the water column, and then you also want to figure out, okay, how close can I get to the fish? You know, sometimes you have to use a bigger bait just to get it further away from the boat if the fish are really spooking from the fish. And then the other thing I find at times is if the water is kind of cold and the fish are in a funk, long casts will usually outproduce short casts, because a lot of times I find that those fish follow it for a long ways. They just don't accelerate and choke the lure down. They follow. Then there's some little twitch or some little, you know, some hitch in that retrieve where it's a stop, a twitch, stall, and those fish are just nosing right behind it. And then that lure does something that triggers that fish, and then they just poke at the back end of that bait and you hook up with them. And so sometimes long casts in the spring can be a big advantage. And so, you know, it might be a deal where you're cast, instead of casting straight at the shore, you're moving the boat in where you cast perpendicular and you try to make as long a cast as you can. Just give that following fish more chances before you finally lose that fish at the boat where you just run out of room to work. And that's something to see or watch for, is if you're casting jerk baits and you're seeing fish follow it right at the boat and turn off of it, or they're hitting it right at the boat when you've got a little bit of line out, probably the biggest thing, adjustment you can make, is back off and make longer cast, even if you're out over 12 feet of water, 10 feet of water, whatever. Just give those fish more time to hit it, because they follow it way more than what we'd ever imagined. And so that's probably a big thing, is sometimes you have to make long casts. That's a big deal at times.
Yeah. So we're talking about, you know, the variety of and versatility, and just how to be versatile as an angler when you're using these baits, and just kind of how you can position yourself and those kind of things. You know, where do we got to go through, you know, go into next? We got, you were talking about patterns. I feel like in the spring, you know, having the tools in the toolbox of search baits in combination with your finesse stuff, and, you know, no one thing is going to catch all the fish all day. is a jerkbait something that you start off with in the morning, or is the water too cold in the, you know, in the spring, typically the morning water is cold. Do you not bring the jerkbait out until later on? Like, how do you feel like you specifically use it on just an average day?
Well, I think if I have a pretty good idea where I know where there's fish, I'll start off with a slip bobber in the morning when the water's still cold. I really have a lot of confidence in that. But if I'm just starting off fresh where I don't know where the fish are going to be, I'll use a jerk bait right away in the morning just to try to find fish, right? And, you know, again, you know, if it's the wrong timing, even if you have a fish or two follow or a short hit right at the boat, whatever it is, at least you know you're in the area and you can try other things. But yes, afternoons can be a big deal. I mean, you know, say the water temperature is, just for argument's sake, say 53 degrees in the morning, and by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 56 degrees. A lot of times you'll see fish position higher and they're up on the break more, up on the flat more, you know, adjacent to the shoreline, and they're just hitting lures more, you know. And so, you know, right away, you know, if I know where there's fish, I feel like I can usually do better right away in the morning with a jig or even a plastic, because I can work a little slower and a little closer to the bottom, or a slip bobber and a leech, like if I'm fishing in Devil's Lake. But you'll see that afternoon switch where if there's a time to, you know, throw hard baits, it's definitely in the afternoon. That water warms up a little bit and set kind of at the highest, warmest point of the day. That's a primo prime window to throw hard baits if you're going to throw hard baits, you know. But like I said, you know, if you don't know where there's fish, if you don't know where to do those things that, you know, that are a lot slower and take more time, throw the hard bait just to find that out.
What part of your setup do you feel like is the most valuable? I mean, the physical setup, like the line, the rod, the reel, you know, just when you're rigging your rods ahead of spring or ahead of, you know, this part of the season, do you have some firm, you know, sort of some firm opinions, things that you could pass along? Or are there some things that are just kind of like loose, just like things that, are, you know, you're kind of experimental with when it comes to the decision making around the type of rod you like? Or maybe that's very situational as well, based on the conditions or how windy it is. Like, maybe just kind of talk me through some different scenarios with your setup decision making.
Well, for me, I mean, there's no right or wrong. I mean, I know people that love to use monofilament with jerk baits, and monofilament works awesome. I think there's something to be said for both monofilament and fluorocarbon when the water is really cold early in the year. I've really grown to like straight fluorocarbon with cold water temps. And some of it is, I feel like the fluorocarbon sinks a little bit. It's got a little bit of stretch, a little bit of subtleness in the presentation when you stop it and start it. But I would say day in and day out, I like to use a thin braid. Like, I love nanofill. I mean, they don't make it anymore, but you know, the thin braids, and then like a fluorocarbon leader just to make the whole setup pike proof, because you're going to get pike that absolutely choke jerk baits. And so I like to use the thin braid for long cast. I can feel the presentation. Sometimes I swear I can feel fish push up behind it, where you just feel that water displacement. And then you can just give that lure a little bit of a twitch, a little bit of a pop, and those fish kiss those back trebles and you can hook right into them. And so I feel like, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with a thin braid with a fluorocarbon leader, but I am experimenting with straight fluorocarbon at times. But probably the big thing, you know, when you have multiple people fishing in the boat, especially, I like to make sure that everybody has the exact same rod and reel. I feel like that's so important, because if one person's catching fish, I can match it. I can look at that retrieve speed. I can see what the other person's doing with their rod and reel, and I can mimic it and match it very quickly, or vice versa. They can mimic or match me. Whereas if we're all using different reels, it's way harder to do. You know, okay, I can see that they're reeling slow, but you know what? They got a bait cast with a lot higher gear ratio. How slow do I have to get? You're guessing, you know? And so I like to make sure everybody's using the exact same setups, so that way when one thing's working, it's so much easier to mimic it. As far as, you know, as far as rods, you know, I like a 7-foot medium, moderate, light action. You know, I like a little bit lighter tip where I can get those, especially the smaller baits and the balsa baits, feel like I can cast them further. And I like a little bit of a lighter tip, a little bit of a moderate action, especially when your fish hit right at the boat where you've got a little bit of give in the rod where you can play that fish, you know, because you're dealing with pretty small treble hooks, generally speaking. So,
what about this year? I mean, we're forecasting because, you know, you're sitting on Devil's Lake. Devil's Lake still has ice. But big parts of the Midwest, especially kind of the southern portion, is looking at an early ice out. I mean, a lot of lakes like in southern Minnesota is like ice off. Now, the walleye season isn't open there. We're kind of talking walleyes here. But in the Dakotas, you look at the small potholes that are going to open up early this year. It's going to be a great opportunity. I think there's going to be a lot of spring to be had this year, potentially. You know, I mean, we're forecasting here. You know, talking about this spring bite or spring type of bites, these cooler water temps and just all these conversations, like what are you forecasting or what would be some cool fishing opportunities along these lines that we should be, that would be just kind of fun to talk about or something that you're looking forward to kind of close to home potentially this spring?
Well, you know, this year is going to be a little different because we did get the mild winter, at least so far. And, you know, we're going to probably have a fairly early ice out in. We don't have a lot of snow, so there's going to be a lot of current coming into the lake, which can really drive a lot of patterns, you know, especially pre-spawn and even post-spawn, too, in the sense that, you know, that current and that water coming into the lake, like if we talk about Devil's Lake, you know, that's going to influence where some of these fish are going to end up. Without that current coming in, what I find is that the fish will still, you know, focus on bridges and causeways and riprap, and, you know, there's certain areas that the fish are going to go, but they're not going to run way upstream. And what I find is that, you know, those types of years, I really like to focus on protected bays that are shallow, like a bay within a bay within a bay, if you can, that's got, say, a 6-foot basin. You know, even if it's soft bottom, those fish will go into those places to warm up. And so it's all going to be about water temperature. I tell you what, early in the year, you know, we talk about forward-facing sonar, we talk about all these different things, but from a 10,000-foot view, if you want to catch more fish in the spring, really pay attention to your water temperature. You know, I mean, I'm talking, if it's a half a degree difference, that's all it takes. You find the warmest water you can, and usually that's where you're going to find a majority of the fish.
This episode of the Jable Podcast is brought to you by Shields. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Now, Devil's Lake, North Dakota is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. We talk about the fishing all the time on this show, but to find out what the lake and the community has to offer, which is way more than we ever talk about on this show, you can head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. Also, our favorite, the fishing tab. It's going to give you real-time fishing reports, directions to fish cleaning stations and boat landings and shore fishing piers, which are awesome, by the way. Also, it's going to give you a list of options for boat rentals or guide services and bait shops. Everything that you need to plan your next adventure in Devil's Lake is at devilslakend.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Northland Fishing Tackle. Northland is a brand you can trust. Since the beginning, they've been creating innovative lure designs made of high-quality components. Most importantly, when you buy fishing tackle that says Northland on the package, you can rest assured it is designed for one thing and one thing only, and that is catching fish. To check out more of what they got, head to their website, northlandtackle.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. I feel like that's super applicable to even just like the small little, you know, like the small bodies of water. I feel like, you know, if anybody, you know, is looking to fish, or maybe you like your home body of water is one of these bigger, you know, like Devil's Lake, And without the runoff, that, you know, the ice out might not be nearly as early as we, you know, I might portray it to be. But you think about the small, like, sloughs in North Dakota and South Dakota that are like less than 600 acres. It's kind of like a bay. It's like a bay within a bay on Devil's Lake. They're, you know, the shallow basin, and but the, you know, these stocked fishing opportunities, they're full of nice walleyes. And, you know, there's just a lot of similarities there. And even if it's not your home body of water, or you don't focus on it in the summertime when, you know, when everything kind of evens out, I feel like this spring, you know, I just like, I just kind of like highlighting some of that stuff. Or maybe it's a reminder, maybe it's a refresher for some people. It's like you might go 5-6 years without, you know, somebody that likes to fish Kakawea or Devil's Lake, you know, they just kind of wait till the ice comes out. But this year, you know, it'd be some tremendous fishing opportunities that maybe we just don't always see. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, the small lakes a lot of times warm up quicker, you know, and so early in the year you can't go wrong with small lakes because they're gonna be a step ahead of schedule. You know, if where you're fishing is behind schedule, you can fast forward by just going to a really small lake that, you know, thawed out quicker, that warmed up quicker, fish spawned quicker, you know, and so you can definitely play some games that way as far as moving ahead or moving back, you know, with whatever the prominent pattern is in an area. But also, too, you know, those small dishbowl slough lakes, you know, these prairie lakes are really set up perfectly for, you know, if you like to cast and use jerk baits, cast and fish shallow water. A lot of these lakes, a lot of these walleyes are shallow for much of the year, you know. And I guess probably how we fish changes in the sense that it's interesting. Sometimes as the summer progresses, we're using shallower lures as the summer progresses because the weeds come up, you know. And so right away, you might be looking at water temperature and just finding the right shoreline that's protected, that's warming up quicker than everything else, that, you know, your boat's in 6-7 feet of water, and you're casting up into a couple feet of water, and you're catching fish halfway back, halfway down the water column. Whereas if you fast forward to July and August, you're fishing in, say, 12 feet of water, and you're casting up over 4 feet of water or 6 feet of water, and you're running a bait that only goes down 2 feet because the weeds are coming up 5 feet, and you're fishing over the tops of the weeds, you know, and that's a prominent big fish deal, especially in a lot of these prairie lakes, you know. And so, you know, the shallow thing lasts probably way longer than what a lot of people would envision, but some of the nuances of it change. You know, early on, it's bottom composition, it's water temp, and then later on, a lot of times it's driven by weeds or wind.
Getting back into the jerkbait conversation, I'm still just wrapping my head around this and everything. You know, some of the other features, you know, that maybe are either overlooked or maybe just ultimately a little less important, but we'd still like to talk about, might be, you know, rattle chambers in baits or color. We haven't addressed that. Maybe, you know, to maybe round this conversation out, talking about what we started, you know, the shallow jerkbait spring walleye bite, along the lines of color selection or, you know, rattle chambers, just things that you, features in a bait that you look at, you know, just for different situations or conditions. What can you tell me along those lines for you?
Well, probably the big thing I think that we haven't touched that's more important than color or rattle chambers in a lot of cases, just your speed and your cadence. You can work these baits a lot of different ways. I mean, you know, it's as simple as casting and reeling, okay? You can reel slow, you can reel fast, you can reel methodically slow. You can reel slow and add a few twitches and stops. You know, but one thing I've started doing the last few years that really opened up my eyes, I don't remember when we were down in Georgia. Remember when we were on the Tennessee River there?
Yeah.
You know, fishing with Sam George and how hard he would snap jerkbaits. I mean, just a hard snap, snap, snap. You know, like he was almost like he's fishing a jigging wrap. Then he would stop it. Snap, 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 and stop it. You know, and that's how they catch, you know, early season smallmouths, for example, down there. And that was kind of an eye-opener to me where, you know, like, wow, I can fish these way more aggressively and pop these way harder than what I ever imagined or realized. And so I started taking that and kind of incorporating that into my retrieve arsenal, if you will. And so, you know, you could give them a really hard snap, a 2-snap cadence, a 3-snap cadence, then kill it and stop it for, you know, whatever amount of line it takes or amount of time it takes to pick up your line. Sometimes, I mean, I've seen it with walleyes and smallmouths where you snap it and you got to let that lure hang for 3 seconds, 4 seconds. I mean, you got to let it hang and stop for a long time. It's a pull or a snap and then a long exaggerated stop, you know, and that can work really well at times. Sometimes it's a shorter snap, a shorter stall, you know, but you can really experiment with that length of time that you let that lure hang, you know, and you can experiment with the retrieve and with the snaps. And, you know, so there's a lot to that that you can really experiment with. And so I would say, you know, just to keep it simple, you know, maybe you have, say, 4, 5, 6 different distinct retrieves that you build confidence in. And as you're fishing, you kind of go through them. You're almost like turning channels on an old black and white TV. You know, you start on one channel, make a few casts, nothing. You turn the channel to another retrieve. But if you could mentally focus on what that retrieve is in changing up that retrieve, just don't spend the whole morning or the whole day with the same speed and the same rod tip movements. Mix that up until you can figure out what those fish want, because sometimes it can be pretty distinct where those fish want something really, really specific, and you can find that quicker. And then the other thing is that I find that sometimes in the springtime, it can be a really slow, methodical retrieve, or at least a slower retrieve. And what I find sometimes is that after I catch a fish or two, I get excited and I have a tendency to reel faster and not even realize it. And sometimes you almost have to make a mental note like, okay, I got to slow back down and get to doing what I was doing when I caught those fish, you know. And so that's something I've noticed, is that when people are excited, myself included, we have a tendency to fish faster. And with jerk baits, that can be, you know, that can be really, really important at times. You got to slow it down. And so, you know, make sure that you get into that groove where, okay, I was reeling this speed when I caught that fish. I got to get back to that speed and think about it, like mentally think about that, so that you can be doing the right thing versus casting and being excited after you catch a fish and reeling way too fast for a half hour. Then finally you start to get fatigued again. You start going back to what you were doing when you caught the fish, if that makes any sense.
Well, that makes great sense. I think that's phenomenal. I think that's great, great, great advice. And, you know, for some people, it might be the first time they really hear it detailed out like that. And for many of us, probably more importantly, we might, you know, I think a lot of us, myself included, you kind of go into spring. You're just so excited. You got all that optimism. You're finally going to fish in a boat. You don't have to drill holes anymore. You're thinking about this open water, you know, or the transition to open water season every year. But I feel like we all have that rust. It takes a couple of trips out or a couple of tough days first off in the spring to really get in your groove. And so conversations like this, I feel like if it's just, you know, a reminder or a refresher for somebody, it puts you a step ahead. I think all that stuff is definitely very, very valuable for sure. But we can wrap this up, man. Time is just fine. We've definitely covered some great stuff. Anything else you can think of?
I think you can, you know, you can definitely experiment with your angle, you know, as far as whether you're casting at the shore or perpendicular. Sometimes you're better off nosing the boat up into the depth of the fish and then casting along the shore versus casting from shallow to deep. That's definitely something you can experiment with. And then also too, you know, as far as getting real nitpicky is, you know, people talk about forward facing sonar, which can be really useful, you know, especially when fish are deeper than say 4 or 5 feet. I mean, you have to adjust the angle and it's a little trickier seeing them shallower than that, but, definitely pay attention to your side imaging. And, your side imaging on a really shallow fish is probably one of the most useful tools that you have. And whether you see rocks or a lay down, like a tree laying in the water, or if you see fish, get comfortable with your angles where what you're seeing on the screen, you can kind of visualize where it is behind the boat. And probably the easiest way to do that is to go by known things that you can physically see, like say a boat dock. Boat dock sticking out of the water, it's got parts of the dock under the water. Go by that boat dock with your side imaging. So as you go by the boat dock, you see what it looks like on your screen, you see how it comes across the screen, but then you see back where that boat dock is to the side and behind the boat. You know, it's not perfectly next to the boat at that point, it's past you, you know, by the time you see it. And get comfortable with those angles so that way when you see fish on your side imagery, you can cast at them.
Yeah, you know what, you kind of bring something interesting up there This might be, you know, be something that can be debated or, you know, whatever. Maybe you don't have an opinion on it, but, you know, talking about a search bait like jerk baits, you know, these hard baits in the springtime and how you can kind of power fish them. It's a deal where you're moving, you're searching. It's not the thing that you're going to do 100% all day. Typically, it's just another great tool in the toolbox. And one of the reasons it's there is that it searches for fish for you. You know, in the spring, how often do you feel like you got to be looking for fish on your forward sonar, or you're driving around with your side imaging, like, versus just, you know, do you feel like maybe this is one of those presentations at a time of year when it might seem kind of old school, where, you know, the electronics might not necessarily do a whole lot for you, where you can just get up and put some of these tactics and tips to work and just let that find the fish for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a big, big proponent of a water temperature gauge. If I could have one thing, I mean, I'm talking side imaging, I'm talking 2D sonar, map chip, everything that you could have in a boat that's electronic, that's on your screen, I think the water temperature is the most important, okay? I would rather know that than anything. And as far as making decisions, and I mean, if you put me in the warmest bay within a bay on the lake, and it's at least 6-7 feet deep, and it's warmer than everything else, and the wind's blowing along one shoreline, give me a canoe. I mean, I'll catch them, I feel like. But side imaging is a very useful tool, you know, especially for finding shallow structure. One of my favorite things is like a little bit of a cup or a lip or a dip that goes up tighter to the bank. Where say it's a 3-foot, 4-foot gradual slope coming off the shoreline, you've got one little area where that's kind of an inside turn where that 5-6 foot of water goes a little bit tighter to the bank. If you have a long shoreline of just soft bottom, if you get a little bit of harder bottom, some sand, gravel, some boulders scattered in an area, that could be a thing. And so side imaging is very useful. And forward-facing sonar can be useful, but here's the thing is that when you get less than 4 feet of water, all those tools become much less useful. You know, that includes side imaging, there's all kinds of times where I catch all kinds of fish 2-3 feet of water, and I can't see them on side imaging, and I'm not going to see them on forward-facing sonar. And so, yeah, I mean, when fish are really shallow like that, it is kind of old school in a way, you know. I mean, it's there's other things that you have to rely on.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make. I mean, and that's probably different for everybody, and everybody goes out fishing for different reasons. Some people probably would have a hard time going fishing and not, you know, having the transducer in the water and not paying attention to the screen. I mean, that's different for everybody, but I think that's a good scenario to kind of map out. It certainly is for me.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways I feel like people that put an overemphasis on some of that stuff in really shallow water, they haven't really done it as much as they want to claim, or they're just trying to sell something and try to make themselves sound smart. But I mean, I've fished with a lot of great anglers, and I don't know a single angler that can see fish with any kind of sonar, whether it's 2D, whether it's side imaging, whether it's forward-facing sonar, less than 3 feet of water. You're just not going to do it, right? You can talk about it, but show me, you know? And, you know, so that's something to remember, you know, fishing the Missouri River, you know, we catch a lot of fish in less than 6 feet of water, you know, when they're up on the sand, and you know, they're 3 to 8 feet of water. Yeah, you'll see them on side imaging, but when they get less than 3 feet of water and they get right up in that skinny water, you just don't see them very well anymore.
And they are there.
Absolutely. They could be there.
Yep. No, I love that. I think that's a great way to kind of close this conversation out, because we've mapped out what you like about it, kind of some of your decision making. You know, you highlight some of the opportunities, the fish patterns. It's just really making good points and touching on all the great topics around this kind of conversation. But to kind of end it like that, where, you know, just some great perspective on you know, what it can be, or just you know, talking about using those electronics, because I feel like it's really hard on the street or in the wild to finish any fishing conversation whatsoever without, you know, questions or just like including some electronics talk. I mean, I definitely try to get through some of these podcasts without it, just because I feel like I hate beating some stuff to like a dead horse. But, and we definitely got to talk about fishing you know, outside of electronics at some time too. And this is kind of one of them. I feel like this, like, I feel like somebody, you know, spends the whole year looking down at their forward sonar up, you know, up in the front of their boat, you know, all summer long, just waiting to see an individual fish and cast at it. You know, spring jerkbait fishing is a blast. And, you know, you can bring novices out. You know, you know, not everybody has to be Kevin Van Dam to do this. I mean, it's just casting and reeling, and there's no telling whose retrieve is going to have the opening success that day. I mean, there's just a lot to like about it. It's a popular topic, and so I'm glad we were able to cover some stuff on it, man. Well,
it's a fun way to catch a fish too, right? I mean, that's why we're out there. When you're popping that lure and it stops, and all of a sudden it just gets mushy, and there's just a big fish hanging on it, or they just nip the back end and you hook them. I mean, it's fun. I love catching fish on jerkbaits. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. It is, man. It is. I love it. I'm glad we were able to touch on this.